Hello, one and all, and welcome to the Alton Brown Cast. My name is Alton Brown, and I'm going to be recording today from a small room, small padded room above the garage, my house in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to be doing what we so often do here on the Alton Brown Cast. We're going to fill like 45 minutes to an hour of your time. We're going to take some calls via the telephone. For those of you that still have those, we're going to also answer some questions from the internet, and we're going to involve ourselves with an interview. And today's interview is a favorite actress of mine. She's actually, I think, done more Good Eats episodes, or did, performed in more Good Eats episodes than any other actress in the world. And her name is Whitty Turner. And not only does Whitty act, she also makes whoopie pies professionally, which is a first for me. I don't actually know anybody who is a professional whoopie pie manufacturer as well as an actress. So we're going to have Whitty Turner on the show. Of course, she became famous. Well, famous. She became quasi-cablebrity famous for her portrayal of Frances Anderson, the super fan who stalked me, Misery style, on Good Eats. So we're looking forward to her being on the show. All right, it's time to answer some of your questions, so let's get to that. Is this Constante? How do you say your name?
Constante.
Very good. Well, what is your question, sir?
What was your favorite Good Eats episode to make?
Good question. You know, I think that in general, the episodes that I really enjoyed making were the ones that were kind of out of the realm of normalcy, the ones that were kind of special or that required that we do something really special from kind of a filmmaking standpoint. Gosh, you know, off the top of my head, I would have to say it was the meat pie episode that we did that was a takeoff on Sweeney Todd, Demon Barber of Fleet Street. And that, you know, it was right after the movie version of that had come out with Johnny Depp. And I had all the right people to play all the parts. And that was really, really, really a lot of fun because we got to, you know, do time travel and, you know, crazy costumes and, you know, razor blades and all that kind of thing. So I would have to vote for that.
Oh, that's great to know. Thanks, Alton.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you very much for calling. We're going to move on to our next caller, David. David, are you on the line?
Hey, this is Dave.
Hey, Dave. Where are you?
I'm in Tallahassee, Florida.
What is up?
Well, I just got back from vacation, spending a week down on St. George Island, and we ate shrimp pretty much every day. And the question is, which do you prefer? Do you prefer using a cornstarch batter or a cornmeal batter? I kind of mixed it all up all week long trying to figure out which one I liked best, and I think it really came down to more presentation than anything else for me.
I have to tell you, I'm not a big fan of cornstarch in batters. I will use it sometimes as a primer coat, as I say. I will sometimes dust things. For instance, when I make corn dogs, I dunk the sausages that are on a stick into cornstarch and then shake it all off before I go into the batter because I get better adherence out of it, a little better than I do with just flour, and I think it can be a little cleaner. But in a batter, I don't much care for it because I don't like the way it gelatinizes. I tend to want to build my batters on flour, and in the case of you're talking about cornmeal, definitely cornmeal, but I want it to be relatively fine cornmeal. I mean, really, one of my favorite batters is nothing more than some cornmeal, a little bit of flour, some beer, and an egg, and I whip that up and use it for a batter for all sorts of things. But I'm not real keen on corn starch. Now, corn flour, rice flour, that's a whole nother ball of wax. I love rice flour, and I do all my tempura with rice flour, and I'm a big believer in that. But the corn starch, I'm not going to vote for it. But I got to tell you, the thing that I do most with shrimp is I grill it. I run a bunch of it onto skewers, and I grill it hot and fast. And I love the way that kind of locks in flavor. If they're really fresh, I don't even brine them. If they're not quite as fresh, I'll brine them for a little while so they'll get really juicy and crunchy when you cook them. You can marinate them for a little while and just some olive oil and some lemon juice, maybe some cumin and some other spices, and then just grill those suckers and eat them straight up. I'm a really, really big fan of letting the seafood do the talking. Because, you know, here's the thing about a batter. You know, it's got a fair amount of fat in it. You've got all those caramelization flavors. It can really kind of get in the way of some of the flavors that come out of a really good, fresh shrimp. So I don't know. Yeah. I might lay off that stuff.
Well, I appreciate your guidance there, Alfie.
You are very, very welcome. Okay, it's time to answer some of your questions, which you have sent to either AskAlton@AltonBrown.com or have put up on Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. Here's an interesting article from a guy named Daniel who needs help with a possum recipe. Okay, I am from Georgia, but I really, really resent the fact that you just automatically assume that I eat possum and have recipes for possum. Now, the fact that I have eaten possum and do, in fact, have a recipe for possum, you know, is a complete coincidence. I got to be honest, I have had possum a bunch in my life, and the best recipe that I've ever had actually comes from the excellent writer Bill Neal. The book that he wrote is just like a Southern cooking. I think it was Southern Southern cooking. Bill Neal's Southern Cooking. And he writes about a procedure in that book for possum with sweet potatoes, which is the first way that I ever had it. You should go out and you should get this book, but I'll give you the basic, you know, rundown here. Is, you know, get yourself a possum, kill yourself a possum. The typical thing to do is just stick them and hang them up and let them bleed. You soak them in some hot water, really, really hot water, scald them to get the hair off. And then you pull out, you know, all the hair. You gotta clean them, draw them, you know, you gotta eviscerate them. And then, typically you refrigerate them for a few days, makes the meat a lot easier to deal with. Then you stick them, this is key. You stick them in a big kettle of water with a couple of, red peppers, red chilies, and anything nice and strong. And so you boil them, parboil them in this pepper water for a couple of hours. Now, an hour. I want to say an hour. I don't remember the procedure exactly. And then you dump out the water, you refill it, and you basically stew them. And while you're doing all that, you cut yourself up some sweet potatoes. And then when the meat's just about done, you move the possum to a Dutch oven, put the pieces of sweet potato around it. Usually sprinkle on some salt and pepper. Maybe some sage, and then you pour in more water and stew it. Anyway, it's stewed, and you should look that up. Bill Neal's Southern Cooking. I have to admit, I had a pet possum when I was a kid. I remember his kid. I lived out in the sticks, and a kid brought this little baby possum to school in a lunchbox. And he had caught it in a trap, and it was this beautiful little white thing, a little baby. And I had to have it, so I traded my Boy Scout knife for the possum, and I took the possum home. I raised it like you would a cat for a couple of years before it kind of went off to make a little possum. So anyway, she was a great pet. She was named Marcy the marsupial. I loved that possum. I did not eat that possum. I did not. A guy named Andrew Q asked me if I know of any good teriyaki sauce recipes. He says he's not really down with that bottled stuff with the floating sesame seeds. Okay, well, I haven't seen that. I've never seen a bottled teriyaki sauce with anything floating in it. Maybe that was dead bugs. I don't know. But I'll tell you this. I love me some teriyaki sauce. I'm a big fan of like Japanese, you know, bowls, rice bowls, teriyaki bowls, things like that. I was born in California, and that was a big thing out there. Anyway, I saw guys just making teriyaki sauce the one and only time that I got to visit Japan, and I've done it this way ever since. My basic recipe, because I make a bunch of it at one time, is a cup of soy sauce and a cup of mirin. You know, mirin is a kind of rice wine. It's similar to sake, but it's much, much lower in alcohol and much sweeter. It's used in sushi rice quite a bit. And then I put in 4 tablespoons of sugar. And just put it in a saucepan, put it over like medium heat, bring it to a boil, turn down the heat, and then you simmer it for a little while. I like to reduce mine down by about a quarter to make it a little stronger and thicker. So that's how I go about doing it. Other people may have other ways of doing that. Don't know. All right. Thanks, everyone, for contributing your culinary queries. Please keep it up, and we'll get to your question eventually, unless it wasn't a very good one, or if 50 other people asked it, in which case we've just got to pick one. For those of you listening to the Alton Browncast, we're talking to Woody Turner, who was a multitasker on a series called Good Eats. No, you were never a unitasker. Woody, when's the last time we saw each other?
It would be the Thanksgiving episode shooting when I was Nurse Ratched.
It wasn't Nurse Ratched. You were an approximation. You were an analog of Nurse Ratched.
Right.
Do you have any idea how many Good Eats episodes you were in? Because I tried to count them, and I got all screwed up.
You know how, like, some people go, I had 433 words in this play I did. You know how people count that?
Yeah,
you would think I would have done that with
No, I don't necessarily think that.
Really?
I just thought maybe off the top of your head you knew. Like you kept paycheck stubs or something.
Right, right. Oh, people got paid to do this?
Yes, people did get paid.
I did not.
But you chose to be fed. You wanted to be fed instead.
That's true. I paid to be on the
We paid you in Cheetos, if I remember correctly.
Yes. I think maybe 8 or 9, 10 maybe. Max.
I think it was a lot more
than
that.
No. Trust me. I did count the times you didn't bring me on the show. I didn't count the times you brought me on. I'm like, another week goes by without a call from Elton. So no, it was very few. But when I was on, I was
BS.
On.
I
and
bet,
that's why it felt like I was
on. I bet that I could sit here and count more of them than that. And I bet Patrick Belden running the soundboard in there could do it as well because he posted them all.
Yeah. No. I'm totally confident that it was 10 maybe.
10. Yeah. I don't think that's possible.
It was maybe a one or
okay,
one or two
yeah,
a
Francis
year.
Would know. Okay.
Okay. Francis. Hi, AB.
No, don't do that. That spooks me. But your most famous role was probably that of superfan Francis Anderson, who absconded with me in season 5.
The Spuds for You Too,
in which was a complete takeoff on the Stephen King book and film of the same name, Misery. And you know, I had originally written a hobbling scene into that with a cutting board, and the Food Network would not allow me to do that because I thought it would. I said, "Well, I'll make it a dream sequence. It won't really happen." And like, no. They were already very, very concerned about where the series was heading at that point.
Yeah, and I feel like I was part of many of the episodes they were concerned about.
Yeah, I used you as the sharp end of the crazy stick a lot of times.
And I was honored.
Because it was always funny, but it was funny in a kind of worrisome way. But I mean, you were Francis Anderson twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's two right there.
Right.
You played the girl running the French store in the Crepe
Show. That was my
show.
Very first episode.
That was your very first episode.
And the next episode, the second episode I did was the Squid.
Yes,
episode.
You were in Squid Pro Quo.
Yes.
Which was our at that time, the biggest and most expensive Good Eats episode. Because remember, we had to turn that soundstage into a beach at night.
Yes, and you had to be hauled off
by a giant squid arm made out of air conditioning, ductwork, and bath mats.
Yes. And I was the one who recommended Bart.
That's right. You brought Bart to the party.
Yes, I brought Bart to the
party. Bart Hansard, who will be here later.
Yes.
I'm going to be talking to him in another podcast.
Yes, he's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome, but you were awesome for bringing him.
So you ended up coming from that. So it's like, I feel like the mother that
you are the mother. And they all were in more episodes than you. That's the
thing. Yes,
part.
They were.
So
I wasn't going to mention that.
All right, so that's two, right? So we're up to two. You were in the Crepe Show.
Then I left,
and you were in the Squid Show.
Yeah, and then I left to go do a play because I was like, I can't do a play and be a production coordinator. So I'm going to take a job that pays less and will end in 6 weeks.
That's when you were doing. Okay, so we're up to two performances.
Right. Then you were like, you know, I miss Witty so much, and she was a professional actor. I was bringing her on just because she was a crew member, and that's what I do.
Right.
But I miss her. And you know what? I've always wanted someone to stalk me, so I'm just going to write it.
So I wrote. Okay, so then I wrote the Misery takeoff.
And then
that's four. But those were big. Well, I'm doing both of those at the same time because you played Francis Anderson twice. So I'm just grouping those together, and that was a big role.
Mm-hmm. I mean, huge.
It was a
and
huge
I was
role.
The
you
first person to be
thing.
Right, and that was a first.
Yes.
Because most of the time you like created a little scenario, then you didn't. You're cooking.
Yeah.
And then
that,
the person
you,
came
you
back
were there
on at
the
end.
Whole time.
Yeah. So and apparently took a long time cooking, which is why you stopped.
Well, that was also, I don't know if you remember, the first and only a super Good Eats fan, which there are only like five, would have noticed is that, I don't know if you remember, but Ramon Engel, our Steadicam operator, was very, very ill. He was still getting over something that he had contracted. I don't remember what it was. It was some kind of liver thing. It was hepatitis. He had hepatitis.
Really?
Yeah. He had gotten hepatitis from some bad food. And so it was the first Good Eats episode with no Steadicam. We shot everything on sticks. All right, so that's four.
All right,
that's four.
Then I did Casseroles,
and then you did Casseroles. You were the church lady,
yes,
one of the church
your
sweet, ladies,
the great late great,
the late great Matilda.
Yes, late great
yes,
Matilda.
Matilda the hound dog,
the church lady. I did the cantaloupe episode. A cantaloupe.
Right, you were the fortune teller.
Yes, I was.
You
a
were
fortune teller.
Teller in the grocery store who was trying to tell me whether or not the melon was any good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you were very good in that role, by the way, because you got kind of a gypsy thing going.
Yeah, I just used all my belly dance costume stuff. Wore that.
Why do you have belly dance costumes?
Because I had taken belly dance for a while.
And was that a professional? Did you write that off on your taxes, those lessons, because you were going to do it professionally?
Did I ever try to do that?
Because you could put that on your resume.
I had it on my resume for a while. But
do it right now.
No.
I'll get some music. I call up some belly dancing music, because I can get it.
Audio-wise, doesn't work unless I'm wearing jingly stuff. because it'll be like,
I can, you can, we pretend, can get, we can just pretend stuff.
No, it was, it's been 8 years.
All right, so now we're up to five. That was the fifth appearance, was the fortune teller in six. Oh, that was six.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you got after that?
Well, my favorite, which was...
we're trying to do this in order.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I did a lot of bit things.
You were a waitress.
Yes, I was a waitress, coconut cream pie.
You were a waitress
pie.
In the coconut cream pie show. I remember that. So that's seven.
See, those almost don't even count.
Yeah, but they do.
They were so...
So what?
I was
beneath
like, you made me drive all the way to...
Yes, we made you drive like 20 miles and paid you like scale. So you're a waitress at least once, if not more than once.
Oh, because we did the bits, the little bits that ended up just on the internet. And I had to read that long order.
That's right. You did
I'm so
diner.
Excited remembering
it was the diner speak where
yes,
where
diner speak.
You did this big long diner talk thing and then I translated.
Yes.
So that's technically eight now.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Lovett. I know I may be skipping.
And my favorite, Mrs. Lovett was like my favorite,
ever.
My favorite Good Eats episode of all time. It was the Sweeney Todd show. For those of you
was
that
it
don't
yours
remember,
favorite? Are you saying
I liked that show very, very much because it was
loved
a lot of fun.
It.
It was a real challenge.
I loved it.
Yeah, you were better than Helena Bonham Carter was in
Thank
the movie.
You. And that wig. Oh
yeah, the wig. The wig was
the wig was the
outrageous.
Star.
Yeah, it was. You were the support.
Yeah, I was literally, I was just supporting the wig.
Well, the wig that Daniel Petro wore as Sweeney Todd was also pretty. I think it was like the same wig. It was something left over some kind of like Cure band, tribute band. So that's nine.
Yeah. And then.
We know that you were in the last Thanksgiving show.
Yeah,
so that's 10 right there.
Bouillabaisse. Okay. And then there was
Bouillabaisse. Okay. You were the waitress, the very blasé Marseille waitress. So that's 11.
Okay. Still, well, not as many as you thought, does it? Huh?
But it's more than you thought.
One
and those
more.
And those were some pretty significant roles.
Yeah, I do have to
those
say, quality versus over quantity. I feel like a mini celebrity. I have the perfect life. There are people out there who think I am so cool because I was on your show, and yet I can still go grocery shopping and no one harasses me.
I can't go grocery shopping.
Right. That's the thing. Like, thank God we stopped at 11.
When I go to the grocery store, people think that I'm like there as a public service, and people come up with some item in their hand and say, how do I cook this? What do I do with this?
And you're like, this isn't chopped. Don't give me other ingredients.
Or they want to give me grief about not riding the right kind of motorcycle or something. I have so my wife does not actually let me go to the grocery store. I have to sneak if I want to go to the grocery store because she's like, I need five items. And I don't need you to. Oh, you played the mother of culinary invention.
Oh my God, how we could forget?
You played the mother of culinary invention.
How could we forget that?
Oh my gosh, thank you, Patty Catalano, our extremely pregnant research coordinator, signaling us from the other room.
That was one of my.
Did
favorites,
you remember that,
Jim?
Patty, or did
thank
no
you.
Jim Pace?
Thank you, Jim. That was one of my favorites
because you got to
I
ride.
I got to levitate.
You got to levitate, and
yeah,
you did that
once.
No.
Yes.
Because you were in the Nacho show.
Yeah.
And then you were in.
Yeah. Come up with this is the one that doesn't exist.
You hit me in something else. You hit because you hit me a lot, didn't
I
you?
I did. This was the best part.
You hit
I'm hitting
me.
You with the whisk wand, and you're like, Witty, harder. Look at the end of the whisk. It's springy. Just come on. And then when I did, I hit you
with
the metal bar.
You hit me with the metal
bar. Yeah.
Yeah. And like made me bleed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was
you
awesome.
Did. You actually cut me one time.
Yeah.
But
cut
I thought you,
you
played. You played the mother of culinary invention more than once.
Nope. No. What else? Nacho and what?
Yeah, we're getting symbols from the control
room.
I will
be so embarrassed. Okay, are we talking now?
So
we're at 12, and then possibly 13.
There were two tortilla shows. You showed up in both the tortilla shows.
No.
Are you sure? Are you no?
Yeah, they're agreeing.
All right, we're still up to like 13 though.
12.
You levitated, for God's sakes.
I know.
Do you think
I got to hit you.
And you got to hit me.
Oh my God.
Very few people got to do that.
Yeah. I am honored. Because you asked me, oh, that's right. That in that episode, you're like, do you know the lady in the refrigerator? I'm like, yeah, second cousin. You're like, figures.
Yes.
Because I guess she hit you.
Because
too.
She hits me. She slaps me a lot.
Yeah.
I had a thing in Good Eats. Someone was actually keeping a website where they were scoring how many times women hit me.
I love that.
Because it happened a lot.
I must have been a lot of them.
And then who was the actress that played the Sugar Plum Fairy? Anybody remember her?
Jen
what?
Bela, she's married now. So
Jen Apgar smacked me a few times.
I was supposed to be that character, but we won't talk about that.
Why weren't you?
Because you changed it.
What did I change?
You fired me and hired her.
I don't remember that.
No, Jim did. Jim had to do the dirty work.
No, he's shaking his head too. I know it was because we had to fly her on wires and she was lighter than
you. Oh,
so that's what it was. You had started your like whoopie pie business, and I think that you were sampling too many of your own wares.
Jen is awesome, and she was perfect for it. And she is a tiny, barely a
she had that gal. Little voice. Which, I mean, it's a very high kind of
no, she is like
Gwendolyn
a little, and what makes
Witch
it funny is
show.
That she comes across very fragile, but then she was like, no, yeah. She was perfect. Yeah, but she shouldn't have told me in the first place that I was...
Heavier than Jen Apgar?
No, that
small.
I was going to play the part.
I don't remember telling you. Did I do that?
In the green room in front of... at the live show, you went across the room and you said, Bart, you're going to play this, da-da-da, and then like, wait, you're going to be the sugar plum fairy. I'm like,
you
weren't
available.
And then Jim called me and booked me. Jim's like, I can't believe she's bringing this up. Anyway, she booked me and then called me back and said, yeah, we've changed the script. I'm like, no problem. Thinking the role was cut.
I don't know why this happened, but I'll get to the bottom of it eventually.
No, I'm fine with it, really. Really, I have totally practically forgotten.
What are you getting out of your purse? What was that? Is that a gun?
A shiv.
I'm not scared of shivs. I can take you in a knife fight.
But a whisk.
God, yeah, God bless. So at least you've been in like 12 or 13 shows.
And honestly, it was, I wouldn't have some of the friends I have today had I not appeared on Good Eats.
Really? Good Eats got you friends?
It hasn't done that for me. I remember how I would show up and be like,
every time you came, you would bring stuff to sell on eBay.
Yeah, I'd be like,
sign this and this and this and this.
Yeah,
and
then
this,
I would present the books to people and go, hi, you don't know me, but will you be my friend? And I'd hand them the book.
I will be your friend if you, yeah, I or you'll be my friend if I, okay, got it. So in the meantime, while all this was going on, you decided to become a professional baker.
Kind of, yeah. So it starts with, you know, I twirled the baton.
Yes, you are a baton twirler.
Very bad baton twirler.
Well, you're not great now, but there was a time.
Not even then.
You didn't really have the skills then?
No, it was more
Can we find something for you to twirl here?
No, because I have, I'll tell you why, my rotator cuff's hurting me.
What did you do to your rotator cuff? I don't know,
but I can't cross my arm.
So you can only spin with one hand?
Well.
Can't you twirl
with your? No, I
guess
I
can
do it. You don't want me to do it. No.
Because I could take the arm out of that that microphone boom over there and give it to you. I mean, there's nothing
Once
in here
again,
you could really break really badly.
This is audio, and it just is not going to.
But the screams, my screams, when you hit me in the head with it, would be good audio.
The sound of everything
that would
being
go viral.
Down
that would be completely viral online. All right, so you were going to tell me about baking, and you said, okay, so twirling.
It's all connected.
Baton twirling.
Yeah.
Okay, connected.
So I was part of a baton twirling troupe based out of Little Five Points, which is this very cool area in Atlanta. And
cool and kind of run down and shabby at the same time.
Yeah. And we were called Turn and Tricks. And so we would dress up in wigs and corsets and fishnet
was
stockings
all,
and go-go
all women?
Boots.
Because this
all
sounds
women. Yeah.
Seriously cross-dresser.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, all women. You're all girls.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we would march in the parades and twirl for events and all this stuff. Uh-huh. But to raise money for us to be able to rent like our little PA system or to buy the wigs, which are not cheap, we would do bake sales.
Okay.
And so we would have them at our base, which was the Euclid Avenue Yacht Club, one of the top 10 dive bars in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, it's awesome. So we would...
dive bar in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. So we would have our bake sale at this dive bar on a Sunday afternoon. And so like 1 year I made homemade Twinkies, and next year I decided to make homemade whoopie pies. And for some reason, they just took off. I mean, I'd taken pictures of them and posted on Facebook to get people to come to the bake sale.
Right.
The following week, I had bought tons of ingredients and... So I still had some leftover next week. I said, hey, if anybody wants more whoopie pies, I have the ingredients. And I haven't stopped making them since. People
and yet,
just keep
you didn't
them.
Bring any here today.
They're on my kitchen counter, all ready for you.
No. Now and I don't even feel bad about kicking you out of that role, the sugar plum.
That's how you just find
Because if
sugar
Jen Apgar came
my,
here, I bet
yes,
she would have brought me
yeah.
something. You yes, know what I'm saying? Just yeah. for the effort.
That's true. I brought them to Good Eats.
You did.
I did. But you
and they were good.
Eat. Did you eat them?
I ate one.
Did
Remember?
You?
Yeah. I mean,
I thought
if I eat that stuff, I get fat immediately, like right before your eyes fat.
No, and we can talk about that because I kind of am following a kind of a paleo diet, which is weird that I'm doing that and
eating whoopie pies
and making them.
So I want to know where your original recipe came from for you. You started with something.
All right. You want to know the truth? I'm going to tell the truth on national
you're gonna
podcast.
Feel on national podcast. This is an international podcast, actually. Yeah. Go ahead.
Very,
let it go because you'll feel
very
better.
Interesting.
You had to start with a recipe. Somewhere you got a recipe that you said, that's what I'm going to make whoopie pies out of.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me hear it.
All right.
Where'd it come
from? I start off just using cake mix and not adding as much liquid.
And what about the cream filling in the middle there, the whoopie pie?
It's your basic.
Did you get it out of a can?
No, no.
It was canned frosting,
no,
wasn't
it? Never, never. It's your basic confectioner's sugar, you know. God, I make it every day and I can't even think what's in it. Vanilla,
butter, milk sometimes.
All that. Right, and, but and I then. Wanted to make interesting flavors, so I made things like salted caramel frosting filled.
Now, is that a big thing already at the time? Because, you know, salted caramels
became big. I wasn't, yeah. It's already.
So you were using a cake mix, like Duncan Hines or, you know,
you want to know? Okay, I'm coming out. Okay. No, this is fascinating.
No, I don't want you to come out here. That's not something I want to be witnessing.
I'm telling the truth, guys. I experimented. I tried Duncan Hines, Betty Crocker, Pillsbury, all of them. The best. Kroger cake mix.
Stop it.
Yes.
No. That's like 47 cents a box.
Yeah. 89 cents for a long time. Then it went up to 99. Totally wrecked my profit margin. No, I'm just kidding.
You had to get it from China after that.
Why was it better? Well, this is one weird thing. It was like when you mixed the cake mix, the higher end ones, you'd end up with little pockets of dry powder. You know, they wouldn't completely... Because you didn't add as much liquid when you make whoopie pie mix because you want them to... I put them in a Ziploc bag and squeezed
it out.
Yeah,
you're basically making cookie batter. I mean, you're making a cookie out of cake. So you got to do a dryer.
So it has to be a thicker batter so it doesn't melt into a pile of nothingness. Sure. But for some reason, the Kroger always blended
more. It must be
the
modified starches or something.
Yeah,
which
so you really needed that extra liquid to get everything dissolved or something.
Now, if I remember correctly, the Kroger cake mixes require the addition of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Egg, vegetable oil, egg, water. And water. So did you just cut back on the water? You did the egg and the oil and then...
Yes. I don't think I cut back on the oil because it wasn't much. Yeah, I just cut back on
the water. Yeah, it's like a quarter cup of oil.
That's my secret, but that's not what I do now.
Okay, so
because
you
then I went,
different.
I had this horrible guilt that I was making them with cake mix when people were starting to buy them from me. I'm like, this isn't right. This isn't right. So
my God,
I bought
that's the most American thing I've ever heard
of. I know.
Of.
But then I bought every freaking whoopie pie cookbook out there.
Oh my God. That must be like six or something, right?
No, there's a bunch. It's
really?
Stupid. Yeah, and I'm sorry. Oh my God, I'm going to get in so much trouble. None of the recipes worked. None of them. They would end up, the whoopie pie would completely dissolve and melt.
Are you
or they
serious?
Would have no flavor, or they would just
crumble.
Well,
I think that
it's
part of the responsibility of a show like this to seriously, you know, out bad recipe books. Should we just go on Amazon.com
online and you can tell me which ones don't work? Sure, they work for them. They just didn't work for me.
You know what? That's a big fat lie. Let me tell you right now.
Because it's a science.
Very often, if a person that buys a cookbook attempts the recipe and it fails. Okay, there's a very slim margin of people that are functional. They can't get it together, you know, and you'll be like, well, did you put the oil in like it says?
Right.
Oh, there's oil in that?
Right.
You know, kind of, there's those people.
Yeah.
But really, most of the time, it's just bad recipes.
Yeah. Because I understand the principle of baking. I watched this show, Good Eats, and so I kind of figured out like how important it is to follow things like that. So then I started going online and looking up recipes and trying. And I was literally to the point of tears. I was like,
I can't find anything.
None of them, the cake does not end up looking like it should. It doesn't rise. It doesn't do all this
stuff.
Well,
that's because you don't have access to the kind of commercial ingredients that they're using in those cake mixes.
Thank you.
Specifically modified starches, which is a very big deal.
Thank you. I like looked at the list and I would try to translate it. And I'd be like, well, maybe if I use guar gum, that'll kind of do something.
Did you try that? Did you actually start using guar gum?
I tried on a couple of recipes. It was okay, but I was like, somehow this isn't going to work. And for a while, I just gave up. And I was like, I felt like I was living a lie, and I was like, oh, it felt terrible. And then one day I'm like, come on, suck it up, Woody, try it one more time. And I Googled again, and I'm telling you, I can't believe this worked. Martha Stewart.
Stop it.
Yes! I tried hers, and I have modified it.
Good, because she will sue you.
Yeah, I know.
She might cut you.
Because she learned about making chips in prison. Yeah.
You'll come out of your house one day, and she'll come out of the shadows, and she'll put one right up to your neck. It'll be like a sawed down butter knife. And she'll say, I want my cut.
Yeah. Well, I modified it. It's different. My recipe is different from hers. But I learned to experiment. I did a lot of research using Shirley's books.
Shirley Coyer.
Yes.
But she won't cut you.
No, she's sweet as can be.
Yeah.
Both in Cookwise and in Bakewise. Both of them had a lot of things that, I mean, I literally just submerged myself in going, okay, if I'm trying to make it rise, but I'm wanting it to be moist, but it's rising, but when it crumbles into pieces, and what ingredient does that? And so in a way, I feel like I did kind of come up with my own recipe.
Well, tell me what you did to Martha's recipe. What did you do to pack that up?
I added more egg, and at one point—
Yolk or whole?
Okay, whole egg. I had one whole egg.
And why did you do that? You were like, I want this to be more tender.
It started
I want
off
it to
working
be
fine.
Richer.
And it started to, the first three times I made it, it was fine. And then it started to just like, I would, if it rose and cracked, if I picked up the cake, and Brooke, it just fell apart.
Like
into
a crumble
pieces.
Cookie.
Yeah. And I was like, no, it needs to be spongier.
Spongier, yeah.
So I don't know if I did the right thing, but I added an egg and it seemed to stop doing
Well, if it did it work, then it's the right thing.
So it doesn't matter if it's scientifically right or not. Oh, and I also didn't, I thought, I'm not going to use butter. I'm going to use Spectrum palm shortening.
Why?
Which is not hydrogenated, because I had read that it helps cakes rise better and not just melt into nothingness.
Because it's got a different melting point.
Yeah. So,
or even shortening.
And that was great, and okay. That really helped, but it's expensive. Although, yeah, it is. You know what? When I divided it, when I found out, it actually is the same price as butter.
Well, you use a different amount.
No, I use the same.
You use the same amount
as
the butter?
Yeah, but it was weird. Yeah, but I wanted to use, I also tried different butters. And I just got to go, can I mention brands of things?
Yeah.
So I was doing Kroger butter and it just, no, Land O'Lakes was better.
Because it's got better a different, higher butter, actually fattier butter.
Yeah,
it's got
and because, you know, as you know, when you bake, you need the butter at room temperature.
Yeah.
And there's the Kroger butter looked really different at room temperature than the Land O'Lakes. I'm like, I want it to still look like the stick that it was. Anyway, so then one day I decided, let me try butter again. Because first time I tried butter, it seemed not to work. And now butter works. So that's what I don't understand is why I can do something one day. I think it's the temperature of the house. I feel like the environment, humidity, all those things.
Well, you know, ovens are never the same. Ovens are inconsistent in a lot of different
ways. Oh, that's another
thing.
I bake in a commercial kitchen, but I experiment at home. So after I experiment at home.
You rent a food grade kitchen someplace?
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually the baker for this little shop called Casseroles.
Okay.
So that's where I'm saying I'm their baker. But we're trying to get it so I can actually have a dual license there.
Okay.
But anyway. So yeah, then I have to change it when I go there because they have big convection ovens and I don't have one. So it's like, oh.
And convection changes everything.
Yeah. So then I have to re-experiment there, but it works. And now I make marshmallows, too. That's my thing.
Marshmallows.
Yes.
You're making marshmallows.
Mm-hmm.
Marshmallows are devilishly
sticky.
You
made them on
I like making marshmallows. Yeah. We make marshmallows.
They're good. You have to give in to the fact that it's going to get messy at one point and then let it go.
You're going to get very messy.
And not obsess about getting every bit out of the pan because you won't.
No, you're not going to.
You're going to get it on your hands. It's okay. Wet your hands. It's the only way you're going to smooth it out.
Or you can spray them with... Pam or something.
Yeah, because I sprayed the bottom with Pam. Line it with
or Baker. Plastic. Baker Secret. Baker Secret is better.
The one that has a little flour in it?
Yeah, it's got a little flour in it.
So anyway, the name of my baking business is?
Yes.
No Big Whoop Bakery.
No Big Whoop.
Because they're small whoopie pies.
But what if you want to start making something else?
It doesn't matter because you know what? It's No Big Whoop. So I decided to make something else. No Big Whoop. I realized it's the answer to my life. Everything. I was going to be like, well, what if? No Big Whoop.
No Big Whoop.
Yeah.
You've been involved in some kind of fitness.
Fitwit.
Now, what the heck is Fitwit? And is that something you made up?
Witty, no, wit, but everyone fit, thinks wit? That. Everyone
well, it's got your name
like,
in it.
I know. Fitwit.
Is Fitwit No Big Whoop?
No.
So what is Fitwit?
Fitwit
is, that?
Is a half nonprofit organization, half for-profit fitness camp.
How do you become half profit, half non-for-profit?
Well, they have a part that gears towards helping children and teens be healthy and fit. And start a positive, healthy lifestyle while they're young.
Okay.
Which, God, I wish there was something like that when I was young. But anyway. And then there's the actual boot camp that they do for adults. And that part of the money we pay goes to help
so you go
kids.
You go to a boot camp. You go to a fitness boot camp.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's I never thought I'd do it. Ever, ever, ever. First of all, I don't get up early in the morning. I don't want to work out outside. It was the best thing I ever did.
Describe to me, do you use every day? I mean, are you doing...
Right now I'm taking a break because I had messed up my
rotator
shoulder.
Cuff.
Yes. But it's 4 days a week. Yeah, 4 days a week. 7 a.m. Sometimes I'll go to a 9 a.m. if I don't have to work and
it's
I don't
more like
get
the
up.
Brunch.
Yeah, the brunch.
That's the brunch boot camp.
It's the ladies who lunch camp. And we go out and we...
What kind of stuff do you do?
Burpees. I'm sure
you
you've
do
heard
burpees?
About burpees.
Well, I do
yeah,
burpees.
You know the burpees. We do kettlebell burpees. Work,
okay.
Which I love,
yeah.
Love kettlebells.
Why?
I'll do that.
Why do you like kettlebell?
Because it actually is a very, it's a very concise, you just do this, you don't need a lot of space, you lift and everything's, and it's,
that's that.
It's a whole body thing. It's really amazing.
Okay, so you do some burpees and you do some kettlebell.
Push-ups,
kettlebell. You do some
planking.
Push-ups. Planks are good. That's kind of more like a Pilates thing though, in a way.
Right,
kind of
right.
Do some planks.
They do a lot of core stuff. Running, which I never did before.
Running?
And
how much running
amazing.
Are you talking about here?
This boot camp doesn't do as much running as a lot of others. But every so often we'll do timed 1 mile and 2 mile runs and stuff. But we'll do a lot of sprinting because I think that's the thing. I think walking and sprinting is the key to health. Ta-da! There, done. Walking and sprinting.
So how But
I will do things
walking,
like
walking how long and then sprinting how long? Is
now,
it a
not
time?
During like not during the camp. We don't do walking and sprinting. We'll just do sprinting.
Okay. But what are you doing, like 100 yard?
Yeah. We'll do like a 50 yard back, 100 yard back, 200 yards.
Okay.
300 yards, then go back down like a ladder.
Okay.
And yeah, it's really awesome. They're really great. And it's a community of people that just...
Well, you look good. So, I mean, it must be working for you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I was going to say I'm old, but we're the same age.
Are we? Are we the same age? I thought you were younger than me.
Yes,
1962.
I will always be a few months younger than you.
Because you're a Libra.
Yes. Very good.
And I'm a Leo, so I'm later. Yeah, I'm still not
quite awesome.
Used to. You know, I have to, you know, 50. I'm still in better shape than I was when I was 40. And I'm pretty sure that I'm in better shape than I was when I was 30.
Yeah. Well, I started the boot camp 2 years ago, and I'd never been physically active.
I forget
active.
Where I am sometimes. Yeah. There's that. But
other than that, yeah, mentally it's a whole different thing. No.
And that
but
never
no,
happens
no, no.
when I'm flying a plane.
I have to say I'm so grateful that I started working out because it was like, honestly, I weigh a lot more than I did a few years ago, but I think I would weigh a whole lot more had I not started working out.
I'm starting to think that the weight thing is...
Scales.
You know, I weigh myself every day and I record every day, but I'm not fixating on it as much as I used to because, you know, you start putting on muscle mass and stuff,
totally.
Muscle weighs and you know.
I do the dunk tank.
Yeah. Well, I get my pool because mm-hmm. I've got a pool up here. And if I sink, I sink and that's good. If I start floating, then
you know,
the gin and tonic.
You know what's the hardest part of me? When I get into the dunk tank, the hardest part to get to the, because you have to go to the very bottom.
You have to go to the bottom of it. Yeah.
My butt floats.
Your butt floats?
Like,
hey, that's no big whoop.
That's a
or maybe
big
it is.
Whoop.
That's a perhaps that's too many whoopie pies.
Big whoop, yeah. So anyway, so I'm doing the baking thing, and I want to. I'm planning on starting a blog and a podcast.
Shocking. And you? What about you? Were doing this kind of craft thing?
Yes, Witty Woo.
Witty
Woo, and that's actually going to become the name of the blog and podcast. It's going to become the umbrella of all that Witty
of your
does.
Empire.
Yes,
the Witty Empire.
Yes.
What? Now you were making
arm
like
warmers.
Arm
I was
warmers.
Upcycling them from sweaters, and I remember because Zoe was allergic to wool, so I had to do.
Yeah, my daughter's allergic to wool, so you made some cashmere ones. And the first time I had seen those actually was in Seattle when I saw somebody that was making those. Well, that's.
I'm just kidding. I have friends who think I invented whoopie pies. I'm like, no, I didn't. I have not done anything original in my life.
Well, that happens. What about acting?
Okay, my day
job. You're actually
job,
good at that, so,
thank
you know.
Thank you. My day job is as a freelance producer.
Yes.
And so that takes up a lot
soulless.
Of time. It is very soulless,
which is why
I
need to do. What kind
of stuff
are you producing right now?
Radio, actually, right now. I'm producing a lot of radio spots, which I love because it's easy. It takes the whole element of video out of the picture.
Yes.
Get it?
Nice.
And so it's hard for me to audition for things. But the last big acting thing I did, besides you, was there's a sitcom on BET called The Game.
Yes, I know
and
the game.
I was cast as an OBGYN in two episodes, and this was a great casting story because you know the whole thing of what's his name? The guy in The Graduate.
That would be Dustin.
Dustin Hoffman.
Hoffman.
When they were casting that, they were looking for a Robert Redford type.
Yeah,
and he walked in and I'm like, all right, we'll use you. So I auditioned, and there was like Dr. Gonzalez, and I wrote my agent. I'm like, and she goes, they can change the name. It doesn't have to be Dr. Gonzalez. If you're good enough, they'll, you know,
why could you not be a Dr. Gonzalez?
I am kind of ethnically ambiguous.
You are ethnically ambiguous.
Yeah, I'm not even kind of.
You're obviously something.
I am clearly
something.
We just
can't tell what
well,
it
when
is.
When you mix Chinese, Scotch, Irish, German, you get this.
A mutt.
So,
you're
yeah.
an international.
Yes, yeah. And they not only kept the name, but they embroidered Dr. Gonzalez on the jacket. It wasn't like I don't even know if they ever said my name. So they could have just totally gotten away with it, but. They actually embroidered Dr. Gonzalez on the jacket.
Wow.
I know. So I thought that was – and they were so nice. It was such a great shoot. Everyone on the – oh, my God. The
so not
cast.
A recurring character, though.
I don't think so. I did two episodes, so.
There could be a spinoff.
Yeah,
Dr. Gonzalez. I think there may be – it's time for
I
that.
Think
or at least you could do
– well, I was hoping there was
going to
be a spinoff
Broadway
of
thing.
Good Eats with me. Just saying. Would have been awesome.
Sorry.
You know,
there's still time.
Happens.
There's still time. All right, Woody, our time's up, and you've got whoopie pies to make. So thanks for coming. And by the way, next time, if you come in here without whoopie pies, you're dancing on the table. That's
okay.
It. It's one or the other.
Boy, after you went to the Claremont, life has just been different. Your expectations of life are so different.
That's not true. They edited that to look like things were going on while I was there. Nothing went on when I was there. There was no dancing.
Well, you sure looked nervous. You didn't have any comments.
I didn't like it. I didn't like being there. I'd never been there. And when I got there, I knew this was not a place for me to be. Can I go now? Can I go now? Can I go now? Can I go now? Can I go now?
Well, that was clearly obvious to many people.
Yeah, I was like, I got to go. I need to go. Goodbye. I'm leaving.
Don't look up. Don't look up. Don't look up. Don't look up.
I'm just me and my polka dotted bow tie are walking out of here.
Yes, you were precious.
Yeah, precious.
Bye.
Talking to Witty Turner has me thinking about, of course, Frances Anderson, who made several appearances on a program that I made for a few years on Food Network, and one of those shows concerned potatoes, and one of course potatoes got to be, well, it's my wife's favorite food is all I'm going to say, so we have a lot of potatoes around here, but I like the line from A.A. Milne, who of course created and wrote Winnie the Pooh, who said, "What I say is that if a fellow really likes potatoes, he must be a pretty decent sort of fellow." I like that. Of course, another great quote, Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, said, "It is a mistake to think you can solve any major problems just with potatoes." My wife would say there is no problem that can't be solved with potatoes, but that's her. You know, potatoes are one of those fascinating foods like tomatoes. It was a New World plant that went to Europe and then came back. The potatoes that we have in North America, most experts and culinary anthropologist types would agree, came from Europe. But of course, the potato is from the Andes down in South America. So it migrated to Europe during what we call the Columbian Exchange, that great movement of food as a result of the discovery of the New World, and then came back from Europe, which is pretty interesting. And when you think about it, the potato, if it wasn't for the potato, the United States might not be really the way it is, not because we're all eating French fries, but think about it. It was the failure of the potato crop, the potato famine in Ireland, that resulted in so many people leaving that island and coming to New York. And when you think about it, New York, although you think of a lot of ethnic groups settling in New York, certainly European Jews and Italians, but it was the Irish who kind of really took over that city and ended up kind of running it, certainly from the police force and a governmental standpoint. So the shape of New York, which some people would suggest steered America through the early part of the 20th century, is greatly determined by the Irish, greatly brought there by the potato. Just something to think about. But it's funny. You look at any event in history. Almost any event in history, and you're going to find somewhere in it food played a part in a way that you might not have thought of before. If you're a fan of the Frances Anderson character as maniacally played, portrayed by Witty Turner, I think we made rosti on that show. Of course, rosti is a Swiss dish. It's a Swiss version of hash browns, except unlike hash browns, it's like hash browns, but more in a cake form, a round, flat, kind of almost pancake form. And it's primarily served, I think, in the Bern area, the canton, as they say, of Bern in Switzerland, but also available in a lot of different parts of Europe. But it's not a hash brown. It is definitely different than a hash brown. And the recipe, I actually know this off the top of my head because I make them quite a bit here because I think it's a lovely kind of serving platform for other foods, either for fried eggs for breakfast, in which case I'm using it in place of a hash brown, or certainly for savory dishes. I actually am really, really fond of slicing duck breast and serving it on top of rosti. Anyway, like I say, it's a hash brown. That's what it is. But you always want to use medium starch potatoes. I like Yukon Golds. I do not find that a russet potato makes a very good rosti. The starch, I think the actual starch composition is not correct. So I use a pound. This is a really easy recipe. It's a pound of Yukon Gold potatoes, and I like to actually chill those. And then shred them. I find that they shred a little better if I chill them first. So if I'm going to make it like in the morning, I'll put them in the refrigerator overnight. You're going to need 4 ounces of onions, also shredded. You're going to need 4 teaspoons of vegetable oil. You're going to need 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter and salt and pepper. So it's real easy to remember, 1-4-4-4. So what you do is you shred up your potatoes and you shred up your onions. And then get this, you put it in a salad spinner, okay? Yes, salad spinner, if you've got one, and just spin as much liquid out of it as you possibly can. It may take a couple of minutes. The other thing you can do is you can just put it into a lay out a kitchen towel tea towel, dish towel, whatever, as long as it's clean. Lay it, kind of put it in the, that mass in the middle. Wrap the towel around it so that you've got two ends, and then twist the towel to wring out the liquid. That is another very, very effective way of getting that liquid out. You just have to make sure you can, or, you know, the other way of doing it is like you just put it into a towel and bring all the four corners together in your hand, and then twist with both hands so that you've got, you know, kind of the big bulb of you know, the towel in one side of your hand and the tail ends in the other, so to speak, and then twist. It's kind of hard to describe that using just words. Anyway, you're going to squeeze the ever-living bejeebers out of the potatoes and the onions because you want as much moisture out as possible, all right? And then you're going to dump that into a mixing bowl and combine that with the oil, okay? That's it. And then divide it into four parts for, you know, big kind of what I would call entree roasty. You could go as far as down into six if you were just going to do them on the side. Get yourself a 10-inch nonstick skillet. Yes, it really does need to be nonstick, and I do suggest owning a nonstick skillet if for nothing else but, you know, eggs. So a nonstick skillet could be an 8-inch. It's okay if you want to do one at a time, or you actually could get two at a time. You're going to melt about 1/2 tablespoon of butter for each one of these, okay? And you're going to get that hot over medium heat, okay? Then drop the a quarter of that potato mixture into the middle of the pan and kind of smash it out with a spatula, all right, until it's a relatively thin round cake. And let it cook for, well, 5 to 7 minutes, but you're going to want to peek up and look under, you know, the underside to make sure that it is not burning. Okay, when it comes time to flip the roasty, This is where things, this is going to seem complicated. It's not. If you were to see it, and you should see it, you'll realize this isn't really that big of a deal. Okay, you've got this very, very thin, half-cooked potato pancake, essentially, right? Okay, so here's what you do. You put another half tablespoon of butter right onto the top of it, and then slide it onto a pan lid. Okay. And it really doesn't matter what kind of pan lid it is. If it's the lid that I actually usually use, one that's bigger than the pan that I'm cooking in. Okay. Then, all right, make sure that there's no other fat in the pan or anything that could splatter around the kitchen. Okay. Make sure that that went off onto the lid. Then what you do is you hold the lid in one hand. Then you invert the pan over the roasty and then flip the whole thing over so that you have flipped the roasty. Now, if you try to do this any other, I got to tell you, I mean, I've tried doing this with three spatulas at a time, and this is the only method that I find actually works. You just slide it onto the lid, flip the pan over on top of it, and then invert the whole thing so that the roasty flips into the pan. And then let this cook for about another 5 to 7 minutes. Slide it off into either a plate, or you can keep it on a rack in a warm oven for, you know, up to half an hour. You can also do this, believe it or not, on a waffle iron, which is pretty cool. Just make sure that in that case, you're going to want to toss the potato and onion pieces with some melted butter before it goes into the waffle iron. And make sure that the waffle iron is on its highest setting. It'll be kind of funky looking because it's going to be, you know, a waffle, but it'll be a waffle made out of potatoes. And what the heck could be wrong with that? Well, America, that's all the time that we have for this week. We had a lot of fun, took some really great calls, and of course the fascinating and effervescent Whitty Turner was with us. And so until next week when we'll do it again, cook smart.